Welcome to episode 95 of Frank Reactions, the podcast where we help you profit from the digital era through better customer experiences online and off. My name is Temma Frank. Like so many people around the world, I've found it hard to get my mind away from President Trump's inauguration this past week. And so in a way, today's interview is quite timely. Today's interview is with Brian Clark, who is the customer experience designer at the Group Health Cooperative in Seattle, Washington. And I say it's quite timely because, of course, we've all heard about the threats to get rid of or radically change the Affordable Health Care Act. So this organization is really facing a bit of a double whammy right now. They've got those threats hanging over them, and they are undergoing a merger with a much larger organization, Kaiser Permanente. So in today's interview, we talk quite a bit about that and what are some of the approaches that have been used to try and deal with customer experience at such a time. Before I get there, though, I did just want to update you on what you may have already figured out, which is that the Frank Reactions podcast is moving to once every second week instead of weekly. I'm finding that since the release of my book, People Shock, and ramping up the amount of public speaking that I'm doing and other efforts, putting out the episode once a week is just getting to be a little bit more than I can justify and handle from a time perspective. So I will try to be a little more reliable and regular, but it will be every 2 weeks instead of weekly for the next little while anyway. Now let's get on with the interview.
Brian Clark and I work for Group Health Cooperative in Seattle, Washington as a customer experience designer.
Okay, and tell me more about Group Health Cooperative. How big is it? What sorts of customers?
Sure, well, we're integrated plan and care delivery health care organizations, so I guess traditionally called a HMO, very much like Kaiser Permanente. In fact, in about a month, we're going to become part of Kaiser Permanente. So we're on the verge of being acquired by Kaiser. But in Washington, in fact, I think we actually, if I'm remembering my history correct, we predate Kaiser nationally. So we've been in Washington, I think, over 75 years. If I'm bad on the history, so I'll have to fact check that one. But we are one of the first in that kind of space as an integrated care and insurance organization. We're one of the kind of early models for that, starting in Seattle. I have primarily been focused in the Puget Sound, but statewide, and we have I think close to 600,000, maybe slightly more than 600,000 members.
Okay.
So, a well-established coordinated care and clinics and hospitals and, across the whole state.
Mm-hmm. So from a customer experience perspective, how do you prepare both your staff and your members for this merger with a giant?
Kaiser, as an organization, it puts a lot of effort into, member and patient experience, as do we.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of effort has been trying to make sure that people understand what will change and what won't.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of trying to improve the communication understanding. So a lot of that is, part of the team I am on also is where member marketing and communication sits.
Okay.
So, trying to make sure that as we move towards that, we are as transparent as we can be with everything we know about what is happening, what will change. People are going to, it's going to be the same clinics with the same doctors and the same pharmacists and the same lab techs and the same nurses, and they're going to be wearing a new lab coat and they're going to be a new sign on the building. So, making sure that people, we have members that literally have been with Group Health since they were born.
Hmm.
I was just reading customer comments in some of the surveys, this person talking about being a member for 57 years. So we have people that know nothing about us as a brand and are brand new joining right now. And we have people that have been members going all the way back to the 40s.
If I understand it, yours as a cooperative would have kind of a different governance structure from Kaiser. And I'm wondering how that would work.
Yeah, I think the governance structure is going to change because, from a legal standpoint and the governance and the way that works is a co-op versus how they're set up. But in a lot of ways, their business model in terms of how they approach delivering integrated care, coordinated care, is very much the same as ours.
Mm-hmm.
And the coordination between the different parts of the organization in terms of the physicians group and the plan and the parts of the organization that sort of everything but the doctors.
Mm-hmm.
In many ways, that way that that's organized within Kaiser, regionally, nationally, it isn't a huge disruption to the internal way that we're already organized. So in a lot of ways, you know, we have to do some alignment from going from being a standalone entity to being part of one region within a larger organization. But the I guess the mental model from a designer perspective and systems and system design, ecosystem view, is very much very similar. You know, from that perspective, it's not hard to for people that are with Group Health as employees to be able to understand the differences and the similarities, which makes it easier to translate for our members. But depending on who you are and how engaged you are with your healthcare provider, you know, some people, they can care less as long as they know where to go and who to get care. Where's the urgent care if I need it at 3 a.m. when I've got a sick tutor?
Sure.
You know, I think trying to make sure that we focus on that as the important thing to communicate, not what the legal structure changes for the foundation and all those things. I'm sure there's engaged members that really care about that, but in the end, the majority of members are like, well, can I get my prescriptions the same way?
Mm-hmm.
I get to keep the same primary care provider, the oncologist that I've been working with on my cancer care, is that going to change? And to clearly communicate that no, none of that's going to change. They'll just get a different name tag.
Right.
And, you know, making sure that as we roll the brand out and, communicate that change, I think the communication channels has been the first focus in terms of that, in terms of the digital channels and the web and the communication touch points, because right now is open enrollment or it's closing here in the next month. So all the new members that are coming in that are new to Group Health are a month later going to be new to Kaiser. So, you know, that part, I think the communication and the hand-holding through that has been the big focus going in.
Okay. And what about, pardon my ignorance here because I am based in Canada, but what about all the discussions in the U.S. about Obamacare and the whole healthcare thing being up in the air? How is that affecting your world?
I think people are concerned about it, in lots of different ways, obviously. You know, certainly from a business perspective, it's concerning because they've spent the last, 6-7 years working to make all those structural changes to be in alignment with the Affordable Care Act.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of work that goes into that. It's not. And, there's a lot of people and it's a lot of data and it's a lot of different, partners that need to communicate to make those systems work. You know, so there's that side of it. There's certainly, obviously, depending on who would lose care if there's a change in how, if the ACA is there or if it isn't, and who that affects, that certainly is a concern for our members.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know off the top of my head my percentage, but, we have a significant percentage of members who are getting their plan through the either directly through the state-managed exchange here in Washington or, through brokers or other means, but where they fall under plans that are part of the Affordable Care Act that would be impacted by changes to that. So they have concerns about, am I going to still have coverage?
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's, the uncertainty of what that looks like. I think they're trying to keep people from being too worried about it right now because we've got to worry about the merger. But I think long term, I know that's a huge concern. I mean, for the whole healthcare system is, they need to focus on keeping people healthy, not on changing how people go in and out of the system because of plan changes. So it's a distraction from the focus of the healthcare system.
So the other thing that I guess I wonder about from a customer experience perspective, and again, maybe this isn't a fair question to ask you because it may not be as relevant with your organization, but we hear so much about Americans complaining that their insurance providers and their HMOs are all just about the money and not about the care. How do you deal with that perception?
Yeah, you know, I think there's certainly a legacy of that for HMOs. I think that's really shifted in the U.S., though, in some ways.
Has it?
Because,
okay.
There's still a definite distinction between people's views of their plan and their health plan versus their health care provider. And even we see that dissonance in, you know, the voice of the customer data we collect. You know, they're, you know, very positive about the relationships with their doctor and the nurses. And, I mean, obviously there's complaints, right? But the satisfaction levels of all is very high for those areas. And the frustrations oftentimes are primarily with bills and billing and the plan side of the interactions they have.
Yes.
Where the money and the, you know, repeat phone calls and those kind of aspects. So, I mean, we deal with that, I think, in the same way. We deal with that dissonance in the same way, but I think we have, and as does Kaiser Permanente, has advantages of it. Those are all people that are in the same building versus, you know, your healthcare insurance company that's separate from your doctor, and they're not coordinating together to help mitigate those things when you're dealing with, you know, say a Blue Cross or Aetna or any of the other
insurance,
where they're not, you know, part and parcel with the provider organization to kind of coordinate, well, you know, how do we make sure that we're not duplicating care or, you know, communicating across all those things. I mean, it doesn't completely eliminate that,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, it's closer to the model for, say, Medicare in the United States. And, you know, I'm certainly familiar with the rest of the industrial world that doesn't have our system, right? We're like the outlier in not having a more unified system in the United States. So,
yeah. Well, I got to say, ours is certainly not perfect.
Yeah, and talking to, you know, my former boss lived in Vancouver, there's certain complaints that are always going to come there. There's the doctor that you like, and then having to deal with the frustrations of making an appointment, getting access, and paying the bill, and why is the bill not what I thought it was going to be? I mean, those things are just there. So I think, you know, we have a better model to deal with those issues, as, you know, with having an integrated piece, and it helps reduce a lot of the duplicative work and the things that add cost, which is
right.
One of the advantage, but also reduces a lot of mistakes and gap communication.
So when you say an integrated piece, you're basically the medical professionals are employees of yours.
The plan and the care and all those pieces are all integrated together in one organization. So,
right.
You know, our pharmacy team is, I can see out the window and across is where our pharmacy is. And, you know, the providers that deliver care within our clinics, while they're sort of set up as a separate organization, you know, they only deliver care at our clinics. So our doctors, the nurses, as well as the folks that are dealing with, you know, referrals and authorizations for specialty care and the, you know, all the plan components of the insurance piece, you know, it's a coordinated effort
mm-hmm.
to share information, both from a clinical perspective, but also, you know, the rest of the experience that wraps around that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that model is something that it's more cost effective, but it also delivers a better outcome, you know, because there's less dropped balls between, you know, moving between systems. So, and less fighting.
Okay, so you've talked about some of the strengths that you have in your structure. From a customer experience perspective, what have been, and I realize this may be changing once you become part of Kaiser, but what have been the major issues that you've dealt with? What are the major customer concerns, and how have you worked through those to try and improve those systems?
Well, I guess speaking for my own experience here, you know, I've been with Group Health almost a year now. I think a big piece for us in the past 12 months has really been focused on new members and trying to, you know, view that experience as people either returning to us or coming to us for the first time. You know, what does that experience look like over the first year? And the part of the organization I am a part of is at this point sort of the enterprise level. So trying to be the connective tissue, I guess, to take the clinical allegories further. You know, we are the ligament across the organization.
Just out of curiosity, do you use the medical analogies when you are talking to executives?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, we have a strong focus on evidence-based medicine. So, you know, we want to apply that same model of an evidence-based approach to customer experience where we have the data to back up, not just anecdote, not just, you know, this feels right. Well, no, this is the actual behavioral data that backs that up so that, you know, when your audience is a bunch of clinicians who they want data to,
sure,
to believe the evidence.
Of course.
And we can come to it with that same strength that makes it a lot easier to make those decisions. So, but, you know, there's already smaller groups that, you know, that are only on the, say, the patient care side that we're focused on the patient experience, in particular the, you know, the doctor and nurse interactions with patients, but not necessarily the bubble that wraps around that supports those interactions. So we're trying to glue together those experiences across the entire journey.
Okay.
And improve the cross coordination of the teams that are maybe very tactically focused on just the call center or just the mobile app development, and glue those things together into a unified experience.
And so how do you do that? How do you approach that?
Part of it is getting clarity on strategy and alignment with, you know, the strategic level goals of the, you know, these are the core things that we want to improve or focus on for the year, and laddering that down to, well, how would we actually deliver on those things in the market?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that sort of strategic alignment of what are getting agreement on priorities. So before I started here, I worked on a couple different consulting projects for a consulting firm for my current boss.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that was, you know, looking at the data on what are those moments of truth, what are the things that are most important to the members from a, you know, and having that evidence there, and the case that could be tied to the strategic goals, the business goals for the organization, so that it could be prioritized and create that, well, if we're going to focus on new members and new member onboarding, are we going to focus on the ability of members to find information and it's understandable, you know, to have easy access to care, you know, dealing with claims. So, you know, there's kind of a couple key milestones there that the whole organization could focus around improving the experience in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and what are typically the barriers to having a smooth experience?
Well, I think, you know, some of it is the inherent complexity of healthcare and, you know, dealing with, I think some of it comes down to old technology and old systems. And,
mm-hmm,
you know, having done a lot of consulting work in insurance and financial services before coming here, you know, it's a lot of those same problems where it's old systems that don't talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
We're a step ahead in that while those old systems are there, they're at least all in the same building.
Okay.
So that, you know, we can start to weave that together. And so a big project over the last 12 months was building out something that is a much more of a 360 view of how the members interact with us so that we can connect the dots in a much better way.
So to do that, are you overlaying something or replacing systems or so using systems integrations tools to patch them together? How do you do that?
Probably a combination. I mean, at this point, it's more about just getting access to all the systems of record and pulling that into, you know, one of my coworkers is, you know, sort of building out something and just using SAS or other databases so that we can at least aggregate the information.
Okay.
You know, there's a whole series of different areas that either are being, you know, systems get upgraded or improved. But a lot of it is about just kind of creating a map of those things together, not necessarily replacing systems, you know, or we, you know, there's systems that need to be replaced, but they're not going to be replaced until after the acquisition or sometime in the 2020s, as part of that effort. But, just trying to improve the transparency of that information so that people have the whole story.
Right.
You know, for instance, we work with a vendor called Press Ganey that does all the patient experience surveys that go out when you visit our clinics and have an interaction with a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And that information is used by that team to give feedback to the doctors and the clinical team to improve those interactions within the clinic. And, you know, it's tied to a specific provider and a specific, you know, interaction they had, but it isn't tied back to the rest of the system. At least it wasn't. In a way that feedback could be used so that the people who designed the plan or manage the call center, or, you know, build the you know, marketing materials that go out to those same patients could learn from the same feedback. So part of it is trying to tie those things together.
Yeah.
And make it a more meaningful understanding of the experiences. So, you know, a big effort has been to improve the communication, not just of the access to that information, but turning that into meaningful, actionable information back out to those same groups so that everybody's working from the same map of the territory, and that, you know, we have agreement on this is what's happening. These are areas where it's painful. Here's the actions we can take on those things that are coordinated together. So it's been a much stronger movement towards having cross-coordination of teams that are, you know, from those different silos, in a sense, trying to glue those things together and be the ligament across that.
Mm-hmm.
Both from a data perspective, but also, I mean, my focus is more on service design as opposed to the data thing, but I'm dependent on the evidence.
For sure.
So, you know, trying to, you know, have that coordination of that across the organization has been a big effort over the last few years in trying to create that muscle memory.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I love all these medical analogies. That's great. So so the data is obviously a crucial piece, mm-hmm. because then the data is giving you the knowledge of what needs to be fixed, I guess, in a lot of ways. What have been some of the biggest challenges, apart from technical challenges? Just thinking in terms of attitudes, let's say internally or elsewhere, what have been the biggest challenges in trying to get those changes made?
This last year.
You've only been there a year.
Yeah, but I think, you know, obviously the pending acquisition becomes this sort of like, you know, stopgap thing where, oh, well, we can't do that until after. So,
right, yeah.
You know, I think that in and of itself is almost a separate issue to slowing work or delaying work. But I think mm-hmm. part of it has just been getting consensus and, you know, kind of the culture change and communication and change management that comes with trying to drive these kind of changes. A lot of it is just getting the right people in the room and getting, getting people to actually believe the information that's available and talk through it and, you know, come to, consensus on, you know, willingness to act on it, you know, change,
yeah.
You know, people, you know, where you're, well, I've always done it this way and, you know, we don't want to change our process, you know, there's sort of a process change aversion, you know, is sort of a human nature thing. I think that's part of it is trying to change the inertia behind these things where people become comfortable with, well, no, it's always going to change and it's going to continue to change. So it becomes sort of, you know, I hate to use the analogy of like agile versus waterfall and technology, right? But it's not this thing where it's, you know, we work on one thing and then it's done. It's like, well, no, it's going to continue to evolve, and getting people to change their mindset. If we're going to continue to make incremental improvements, you know, we're not going to just roll out and change the whole web platform. No, well, we're going to fix this part and then we'll fix this part. And yeah, we'd like it to all be better all at once, but that's not going to happen. So let's, you know, build on those successes and getting people to kind of change the momentum at which they approach those things.
Mm-hmm.
For any large organization, you know, I think if they had one speed that they did things and, trying to get people to change the pace at which they approach customer experience changes is something that it takes a while to kind of get the motor moving, in a sense of, you know, people can make these changes but you know, there's a lot of drag on the system,
mm-hmm.
you know, both from, well, wait a minute, we got to go to compliance, or anything where you have to, you know, worry about the checkbox pieces of that becomes, okay, well, then we just won't do it because legal's not going to sign off on it. Well, did you ask them? Well, no, we didn't ask them, but they said no last time.
Right.
But, well, you know, like if Kaiser's doing this in California, we can probably do it here. you know, trying to get people to think a little bit more nimbly about how to fix things and, you know, different ways to adapt to that. And I mean, that's been a learning experience for me, as well as, you know, trying to get everybody on board to those processes and just knowing who to have the right person in the room when you're talking about an organization that has people spread across the state. And, you know, if the owner for some processes in Spokane and yeah, they're only an hour flight away, but they're not in the same building and you can't just walk down and talk to them about it. You know, trying to find ways to improve that communication has probably been the biggest piece to try and overcome from a process perspective.
And are there any particular approaches or techniques that you've used that you found really worked well to help with that?
You know, I think a lot of it is sort of tried and true kind of consulting 101 things. So, you know, I think a lot of it is trying to apply those same principles of improving communication, being proactive, and, you know, trying to keep the conversation going so that, you know, people's day job, because most of the people we're trying to bring on board to help with these efforts already have, you know, 39.5 hours of their time
right.
dedicated to something else.
Yeah.
So, you know, trying to find creative ways to where, you know, especially with, if you start working with the clinical teams, and most doctors are, they're booked. They don't have a lot of extra time to go and, you know, go off for a design workshop. So, okay, well, I'm going to come up to your clinic and we'll walk around the campus for 15 minutes so I can interview you so we can start to figure out how to do this. You know, I think a lot of it comes down to that and being very, just being very proactive in that process and trying to improve the visibility of the information and get, you know, get decisions made about it in that way. I mean, I think, you know, the organization and the culture is very desirous of delivering good experiences and people are very committed to it. I mean, people wouldn't be doctors and nurses and work in this if they didn't have empathy and care about those things. Trying to get people's attention to focus on, okay, we're going to fix this in a way that's, you know, meaningful and has impact. I think getting people to do that requires a lot of very, you know, coordinated project management and communication and, you know, kind of sharing outputs and information and getting people to feel the positive aspects of working together on things as opposed to, oh, it's just one meeting I go to. It's like, well, you know, you kind of have to flip the lens on it for people.
So how do you do that? Like, how do you get them to see the positive aspects of it?
Well, some of it is sharing the things that are working, sharing the successes, or sometimes it's showing the pain. You know, a lot of the processes that are already in place that clinical teams do when they meet on these kind of patient issues, you know, they always start with a patient story. And, you know, there's always stories that go around from customer experience about, you know, CEOs or leaders who have like the empty chair at the boardroom that represents the customer, those kind of metaphors. But, you know, I mean, doctors and nurses, I mean, they always have had that kind of view of, you know, if they're going to meet on things, they usually start with the patient story. You know, I had a meeting this morning and, you know, the doctor from the physician's team, who's the patient experience executive, I mean, that's what we started with, was a story about a patient and, you know, what experiences are we trying to improve for these people. So I think a lot of it is trying to use the language they already use, maybe hence my overuse of medical metaphors, trying to engage people in the language and in the mindset they already have, you know, sort of its application of empathy, right? And use that language, not the language of product design, not the language of center management or whatever, you know, aspect of it is.
Yeah,
you know, they speak to people in language they can understand. So the same goes for using the right language for members and patients and for the internal team. So I think a lot of it is about showing up and listening and, you know, bringing the right evidence that they need to hear and, you know, and adapting to what they need to be successful, you know, and so that what the nurses need is the same information that the, you know, physician's leadership team needs. They need a different set of evidence and a different set of information.
As is the case with just about any major change initiative, it seems that it really mainly comes down to communication. And it was interesting to hear his perspective that physically being in the same space actually has helped quite a bit with the communication. So it's a challenge for organizations that are spread out, but not an insurmountable one, but it's certainly something to bear in mind. I also find it intriguing how people in different industries think about their work. So in his case, using medical analogies, last year sometime I interviewed someone from John Deere and she uses tractor analogies. So in your industry, think about what are the metaphors that are common and understandable and relatable and try to speak in those terms. That's all I've got for you today. I do hope to hear from you. I'm particularly eager to get your ideas on who you'd like me to interview and or on specific topics you'd like me to cover. You can always reach me by email, Tema, T-E-M as in marketing A, at frankreactions.com, or on Twitter, simply at Tema Frank, or LinkedIn, or there is a Frank Reactions Facebook page. So I would absolutely love to hear from you. And I know we all say this as podcasters, but it really does make a difference if you go and give us a rating and a review at iTunes. I would really be grateful if you could take a moment to do that. Thank you so much, and I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Bye.